I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, America Out Loud. That's my little bit of a play on Good Morning Vietnam with Robin Williams. Hello, everybody. I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I'm your host here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. You know, today I want to talk a little bit about my brothers and sisters in law enforcement. I have seen some horrific things going on. You know, I wrote an article not too long ago on the AmericaOutloud.com platform, which is still up there. You can go take a look. It's called For the Price of a Cup of Coffee, and it talks about what we're doing to law enforcement. Let me give you two guesses here. If law enforcement were to go away, what do you think would happen? Number one, everyone would get along so much better because these nasty, bully, racist cops would be gone. Or number two, we would fall into complete chaos and it would be a hellhole life on Earth. The answer is life would be horrible if our police went away. You know, human nature being what it is, and this is something that I talk about once in a while. You know, when I talk about the default position of humanity is to live in tyranny. If you take away law enforcement, if you take the police away, you immediately are at the mercy of whoever wants to do whatever they want to do. And if they're bigger and stronger than you, they're going to do it to you and to your family and to everybody else. Don't kid yourself. You know, one of the things we see in all these apocalyptic dystopian future movies is that society devolves down to the lowest denominator. You know, who's got the most power gets what they want. Isn't that what humanity has really been all these thousands of centuries that we've been around? We're keeping track of things, right? Didn't the strong leader always come in and take everything from whoever couldn't fight back? What do you think would happen if law enforcement disappeared tomorrow? We would have exactly that problem. So, the blue line. What is the blue line? We hear about this all the time. The thin blue line. It's like it's some horrible thing that cops get together and decide to, you know, be terrible people. The blue line is a connection between everyone who wears the badge, swears the oath, and decides to go out and do the right thing for society. That is the blue line. Blue because the uniforms are usually blue, traditionally blue. Okay? I've seen a lot of sheriff's departments with brown and with green and with the gray. They all look fantastic. But the term blue line comes from the average traditional law enforcement uniform was blue. A blue shirt, blue pants, that kind of a thing. So the blue line is a brotherhood and a sisterhood of the men and women who have donned the uniform, who have gotten together to decide to go out and do the right thing by society, enforce our laws, protect and serve our communities. Now, I have seen some horrific things recently. We see people in New York who are attacking our police officers. We're seeing this in other states. We're seeing ambushes now. You know, a long, long, long time ago, there was a patrolman named Ed Burns, New York City PD. And Ed Burns was stationed, a young guy, he was stationed in a patrol car in uniform to sit in front of a house in a particular area for whatever his assignment was, to watch this house for somebody that was in there. And he was targeted for assassination. Somebody walked up and killed the young man because he was a cop. That drew such a outrage among the whole country that somebody would do this to law enforcement. That happens a lot today, and we don't hear a word about it. There's no outrage. There's no outrage. Well, not in the media. I'm not talking about you and Chasing Justice Land, because I know you're good and decent people. And we see law enforcement for what it is. They are the men and women who are doing our bidding, the community's bidding, wherever your community is. You know, the law enforcement officers are out there to enforce the laws we, the people, have demanded be put into place. You know, this is the civility we demand of each other, because if we didn't have someone to enforce that, there would be no civility. It would be a Mad Max world out there, and the strongest person, the best shot, whoever had the most weaponry would be in control of your food, your family, and everything else that goes on. So this entire change in culture is really a symptom of the sickness that our society is in. You know, I've tried for a really long time to just sit back and hope that it would go slow, that we would heal from all of the things that are going on. I don't see it happening. And I'm not a pessimistic person. I'm a positive kind of guy. But I got to tell you, what I see happening to our law enforcement officers out there, these ambushes, these attacks, the lack of respect that we see everywhere, what the communities that are doing this don't understand, and when I say communities, I mean all of the rest of America that is not law enforcement. When you stand by and you see that and you go, well, I guess the cops deserve that for the way they treat people. Well, I didn't like I got a ticket from that cop that time. Let me tell you something. When people will disrespect and attack the cops, that last line of security, that last line of authority, what do you think they'll do to you? Right? If someone is willing to shoot at a cop, run down a cop, ambush a cop, do you think they would think twice about doing that to you? This is where people are very short-sighted in understanding that, you know, our law enforcement officers, the men and women that are out there, and I was one of them actively for 27 and a half years, and I am one still to this day in my heart. There's no meeting in the morning where we get together and decide who we're going to go after that day. There is no conversations in the locker room about who we hate and who we're going to go get. Hey, let's do some chokeholds today and kill some citizens. That is so disgusting for me to think that there are people that actually believe that kind of thing. I get myself really worked up over it, and seeing these officers killed almost every day now in these different kind of attacks is really, really got me bothered, because I see the young men who I teach in police academies all over the place in the Northeast here, and I'm branching out. My company's branching out, and I like to teach because I like to pass on what I've learned, my experiences, to the next generation. I think that's the right thing to do. And I see these young men and women who are eager to serve their communities, to do what's right. And these are men and women of all races, all religions, all creeds, from all different parts of our country. They want to go out and do the right thing. You know, they want to protect their community. They want to protect the innocent. They want to protect the weak. And they want to go after the bad guys and the bad girls. Now, if you happen to be a bad guy or a bad girl, you might find that offensive that these cops would come after you. Or you might be like someone else I know, that I know and love very dearly, Jimmy the Contrarian, who has sometimes a very hard time with the processes of law enforcement. And Jim is a very good man, and he's a law-abiding man, and he absolutely backs law enforcement. So even when you hear him in the neighborhood talking about things, he's bringing up the devil's advocate point of view about why the police have to do the things they do. And you know what? He's not always wrong. So I'm going to explain that. So one of the things Jim doesn't like is, he says, why is it that you see when the cops have to arrest somebody, they have to throw them on the ground and jump on them? I said, okay. An arrest of a person who is resisting, even a little bit of resistance, can look ugly. The police are not there to get hurt or to hurt anybody else. They're there to do a job. And if they have made a determination that you are under arrest, then the only option you have, the only legal option you have, is to submit to that arrest. Whether you agree with that arrest, whether you disagree with that arrest, whether you're drunk and you don't think you should have to go to jail, whether you're high as a kite and you think you should be able to do whatever stupid thing you're doing, doesn't matter. If the law enforcement officer, the men and women that are out there in doing their police work, they say, you're under arrest, sir, put your hands behind your back. No one that's ever just submitted to the arrest peacefully, whether they agreed or disagreed, I've never seen those people dropped on the ground, punched, kicked, or anything else. When someone submits peacefully to the arrest, it's over. That's it. You get arrested, you get put in a car, and away you go. The exception to that depends on what you're being arrested for. If you're being arrested for an outstanding parking ticket, and you put your hands behind your back and you submit to that arrest, officer's going to cuff you, put you in a car, and away you go. If you are wanted for a major violent felony and you are stopped on the side of the road and you are removed from the car. There's a possibility there that you may be placed on the ground to be handcuffed because they don't know if you have weapons. They have no idea what's going on with you. And at that point, you might be taken to the ground because it's safer to have you on the ground where we can control that person, that they can't grab a weapon, that they can't run, they can't fist fight, they don't have the leverage, they're on the ground. So a lot of times, you will see people escorted out of the car, told to get out of the car, get on your hands and knees, put your hands up, lace your fingers, cross your feet. Why you do that is so that you immobilize the person, so they can't do things. Well, you shouldn't immobilize anyone. You shouldn't have to do that. They should have their dignity. Yeah, they have all their dignity. These are all specific practices that law enforcement employs to make sure everyone comes out of the encounter safely. So by taking a few seconds to make sure that person is secured, and I'm talking about the person wanted for a violent felony, not someone who's wanted for parking tickets or because they ran through a red light or whatever other thing they might get arrested for. We're talking a violent person, someone who committed a crime, a robbery, a beating, something like that. That person is going to be removed from the car, probably placed on the ground, and handcuffed on the ground. Not because the cops want to beat somebody, not because they hate somebody, because that is the safest way to do it. Now, it's ugly. It's ugly when these kind of things have to happen, to see human beings interact in such a way. When you add resistance to it, now it gets amped up. And it's not the police that resist. Let's be clear about that. In all of these videos we see of people getting arrested with multiple officers pulling them to the ground and trying to get control of them, you will see that it is the person who is resisting. Now, what is resisting? Because I'll see crowds of people standing around, he's not resisting, he's not resisting. Meantime, he's not putting his hands behind his back. Meantime, he's flailing his legs, he's flailing his arms, he's pulling in tight, he's not giving up his arm. That is resisting. So when you resist, the officers have every right to overcome your resistance. And sometimes, some people we have to arrest are pretty strong, and it might take two or three officers to safely get that person in custody. Okay? I can't tell you how many people over the years that I had to arrest that decided to resist, that I was in some knockdown, drag-out fights with people, that they were trying to hurt me to get away, and I was trying to control them so I could arrest them. It gets ugly. When you get a couple of cops there, well, it's four against one. Well, that's not fair. No such thing about fair. It's about taking someone into custody who's resisting. And it's better to have four cops, one for each arm, one for each leg, hold the person down and get them cuffed up than it is to say, well, you two guys fight, and this way it's only two on one. That's ridiculous. And if you think like that, you got something wrong. That's not how life works. These people that resist, no matter who they are, and I've seen every kind of person resist, when they resist, they bring the violence upon themselves because the police are not obligated to go, oh, wait a minute, he doesn't want to be arrested, she doesn't want to be arrested. Wait a minute, they said they didn't do it. They didn't do nothing, so back up, everybody. They didn't do nothing, so let's not arrest them. Ridiculous. All right, so the simplest way for people to not be engaged in any kind of a violent arrest is to submit when you're told you're under arrest. Do what the officer tells you. There are reasons they tell you these things. Step out of the car. Get on the ground. Now, Jimmy might say, why would someone have to get on the ground if they didn't do anything? And I just told you, because sometimes that is the safest way to take them into custody. They get on the ground, they lose their leverage, they lose their ability to fight, they lose their ability to run, and then you can control them and take them into custody. People are not being taken into custody because the cops got nothing better to do this afternoon. They're being taken into custody because they committed a crime of some kind. They violated the laws that you and me sent those officers out there to enforce. You know, we demand that our legislatures make laws so we have a civil society, so we have a safe society. And then we have to have officers go out and enforce the law so that people who don't want to be civil, who don't want to be nice, who want to engage in violence and mayhem and everything else and damage our lives and our families, don't get to do it. So that's my opening that I wanted to talk about today. Because I see these ambushes, I see these attacks, I see these these people calling the cops these most horrible names, and I start to see in New York when they're throwing water, now they're throwing food, they're throwing other items at the cops when they're trying to make an arrest. That is so inherently dangerous because you don't know that that person that the officer is arresting for a parking ticket in New York is actually somebody who robbed someone 2 days earlier, and that's why he thinks he's being arrested and he doesn't want to go. Or maybe he's got a gun in the car. Maybe there's drugs in the car. Maybe he just killed his ex-wife and that's why he thinks you're stopping him. The officers have no idea why people resist, and they're not there to take a beating because someone doesn't feel they should be arrested. It's as simple as that. Now, I would not like to be arrested. You know what? I'm a pretty good guy. I don't really do anything wrong. But if an officer made a determination of Joe that I was doing something that I should be arrested for, I would submit to the arrest. I would go to court. And in court is where I would argue my case. I would say, Your Honor, this wasn't right. I didn't do this, whatever it is that the officer said I did. My attorney would stand up and make those cases. But I certainly wouldn't fist fight the officer out in the street. I wouldn't pull my arms away. I wouldn't kick, spit, curse, try and run, push the officer, shove the officer, drag him into the car and drive down the street with them sticking out of the window. Do you realize the violence that people do to our law enforcement officers when the simplest thing in the world to do is follow the law? Now, if you're a law-abiding citizen, you go about your business. You don't want to be bothered by people who don't want to follow the law, that want to rob you, rape you, beat you, and do all kinds of things to you. So you might have a hard time understanding why some people would, but you know what? Without our law enforcement officers out there, that's exactly what would happen to everybody. So let's keep that in mind. Next time we see an officer, say thank you for your service, because those men and women that are out there, they are doing the exact same kind of service as our military, only they're doing it on the home front. Okay? So I want to thank you, everybody out there in blue, my brothers and sisters, those who served in the past, those who served with me, those who are serving today, and yes, to those who will serve tomorrow. Like our military, you are heroes. And this includes our friends in corrections. Let's not forget them. They have the hardest beat in the whole country. They work inside the jail where everybody did something bad and there's a lot going on in there. So listen, today's show is about our blue family. And they are all our family. You know, we go look for our cops when we need help. So remember that. When you see them, say thank you. Because here on Chasing Justice, we say thank you to our law enforcement family. We'll be back in a minute with round two.
Spreading the outlaw truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Chasing Justice here with your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. As we continue our tribute to the blue men and women of law enforcement who are out there every single day serving us. So I guess there's no way to get around, if we're going to talk about law enforcement and what people do, is the ongoing Comey situation. So I want to give that just a minute, because we saw recently that the IG report came out that basically says he violated a lot of rules, he violated a lot of policies, but they're not going to prosecute. Now, as we all know, my concern here all along has been that what we're actually going to see is we're going to find that, a lot of fingers are going to be pointed in all of this. Here's what these people did wrong, here's what they did unethically, here's what they did that could be breaking of the law, but we're not going to proceed with any prosecutions at this time. Now, I'm concerned about that, and I've stated that, because that doesn't really give us any justice. So, what would the purpose be behind that? Why would Attorney General Barr allow that to happen? Why would he allow the whole country to see all of this violation of the law and then turn around and not prosecute anyone. So the initial report that comes out about Comey and his behavior with the documents that he took, very underhanded that he did this, that he took those notes. He ran right out to his car and he made computer notes. Then he kept them. He did give them to his attorney. He did give, you know, the classified ones to his attorney. So he did disseminate some classified documents. Now, maybe the other ones that he wrote, the other notes, were not considered classified, but he gave them to a reporter. He gave things to a reporter. He leaked. And then he lied about it. So isn't that what we fired the other guy for? Right? McCabe, didn't he get fired for lying about what he did? So Comey got fired, but they're not going to prosecute him, and we don't know that they're going to prosecute McCabe because, you know, they've been looking at that for quite a long time. What is there to look at? Either you're going to do it or you're not going to do it. So there's my fear all along, is that this is really just a swamp whitewash. We're all going to hear how wrong these people were, what they shouldn't have done, how horrible it was, and we hope in the future everyone will learn their lesson and never proceed this way again. The big finger in your eye here for all of us is that if you or I did anything that these people involved with this this attempted coup d'etat against President Trump or candidate Trump and then President Trump, if you and I did any of those things, and of course we can lump Hillary in there also, imagine if you got a subpoena from the federal government in a criminal investigation, told you to bring in your emails. We need to see your emails. We need to see your computer. And then you went through them and you deleted the ones that you figured that's not part of your investigation. So I just got rid of those. Could you imagine what would happen to you or me? Well, we wouldn't be listening to Chasing Justice and I wouldn't be doing this program because we'd be sitting in jail somewhere. That is the finger in everybody's eye here. That if there are not prosecutions, if we do not see these people who did these things blatantly get arrested, get charged, and have to answer, then all we're going to get is character after character, just like Jim Comey, who came out after this blistering report, said he was unethical, he did all these bad things, and basically he said, see, proves I did nothing wrong, I'd like to get an apology. Or he didn't want an apology, he would just like people to say they were sorry for lying about him. So you get this arrogant individual who broke all these laws, betrayed you and me and all of law enforcement by doing what he did and what all these other characters did in this investigation, this coup d'etat, to go after a president. And if all we're going to get out of it is the satisfaction of knowing that, well, they were wrong, but they get to stick their finger in our eye and say, well, but see, nothing happened to me, so I wasn't really guilty. Otherwise, they would have charged me, right? That's going to damage law enforcement. That's going to damage law enforcement. So I wanted to mention that. I'm hoping that, you know, what everyone said, oh, the next one's coming, it's going to be really big, they're really going to go after everybody in September or October or maybe November or could be January, could be next spring, I don't know when the report comes out, could be next July. Where is this justice? How long does it take to investigate? Whatever they have investigated up to this point, let's pass out some indictments. You know, I was in law enforcement for a long, long time, and I know that if I had enough to charge with somebody with something on Monday, I charge them and I lock them up. And if it turns out I keep investigating and I find more crimes they did on Friday, you know what I do then? I charge them on Friday with the other crimes that I've investigated and found out that they did. This would go a long way to shaking this entire thing up. Because you know what? If they all see that no one is really getting prosecuted, there's no reason for anyone to come forward and talk. There's no reason for any one of these players involved in this, these guilty players, to break the code of silence they have going on and come forward and give up what everybody else did. See, that's how it usually works. You indict Mr. A, and Mr. A says, wait a minute, whoa. I got arrested, and I'm getting charged, and I'm going down. Well, you know what? I only did A, B, C, and D. These guys did E, F, G, H, and I, and I'm giving them up. Then they testify, then you go arrest those people and you charge them. And before you know it, everybody that should be charged gets charged because everybody starts acting in their own interest and they're not going to go down for no reason. They're going to take other people with them, and that's how you get people to tell you things. So we need, as an American people, we need to see that the justice system isn't just a system to hold you and me in control to make sure we toe the line and do what's right, but that our elected elite officials and these appointed people in these high ivory tower locations, they have to follow the law too, or they'll be held to account. So I hope Mr. Barr is going to do that. But you know what? What have we heard from our politicians for years and years and years? Listen, we can't fix the problem today, so we're not going to bother. But next Congress, when the next Congress starts, we're going after this big time. Let's go through the next election. Even our own Republicans. How many times did they pull that wool over our eyes? Listen, we don't have enough Republicans right now to do the things that you want us to do. So elect us again. And after that next election, boy, when we have enough people, we're going to do it. Then they get elected and they get in there and they don't do it. They do nothing. But you know what? The next time, now give us the presidency. And once we get the presidency, boy, then we're really going to do something. It's a long line of swamp creatures who are living wonderful lives down there in D.C. On the backs of you and me, the people who we have to follow the law or we'll end up in jail, unlike those other people. All right, so I wanted to get that out there because that's really been bothering me to watch this. You know, I worked with a lot of FBI people, a lot of federal law enforcement, and I know in conversations I've had with them, they are disgusted by the behaviors of these individuals from the FBI and the Department of Justice that were involved in this this phony sham investigation to pull the wool over all our eyes and remove an elected president. And as I've said 100 times for all those naysayers out there, if somebody had done this to Obama and I didn't agree with Mr. Obama's policies in any way, shape, or form, I did not, I would be just as outraged that somebody tried to do that to an elected president. Because you know what? Once we start to give up the integrity of our elections, we no longer have our country. See, this is what I've been getting at for a long time, saying we're getting to the breaking point here. With this instance is probably the most important thing that's happened in our country in years. And well, we have a corrupt media who is not paying attention to it. Where's one or two stories per network to say, hey, you know what, is there really anything to this coup d'etat? Let's really examine it. Let's really talk to people. Let's really look at stuff. Nothing, not a word. So they're really not doing the right thing. And when they get all upset and they get outraged that, you know, the president or anybody else would say that, you know, their enemy, the people, oh, how can you say that? We're here to, you know, to hold truth to power. They're only here to hold truth to certain power, not to all the power, just the power they don't like. And if they don't have the truth that they want to have, they make it up. You know, look at this Lawrence O'Donnell guy. You know, last week when he came up with that whole story about the Russian oligarchs who co-signed loans for Donald Trump, that's why he's in their pocket. And he was told by the rules of the station he works for that you can't put out a single source thing like that, but he did it anyway because he thought he had him. He was going to be the guy to get him. And it turns out he didn't have anything. It was another fake news. How can they not look at that and go, well, I see why people think we're an enemy of the people, because we keep lying to further our point of view as opposed to just reporting. And they can't seem to get past that just reporting, because if they did, they would have to say, well, Trump's not doing such a bad job. He's a little bit mouthy. He says some crazy things once in a while, some Twitter things. He shoots from the hip, when he makes comments. But other than that, his policies are working. The country is in a better place than it was. The economy is better. Our military is stronger. You know, we are in a better place, no matter what anyone wants to say. And if they were truthful, they would have to say that too. And they just can't. You see the hatred in their eyes. You see the it drips from their lips that they're not recording. They're not reporting anything. They're just giving their opinions and backing themselves up in this echo chamber with each other. That is just really, it is disgusting. And it is a very clear sign that we are in a place that we've never been before. And it's a dangerous place. It's a dangerous place because we're not being told the truth about things. We're not, you know, our reporters are out there. The reason that they're so important to our republic is that they are supposed to go and investigate things that you and I can't. We can't go and ask all these questions, go to Washington, fly around, go all see these congressmen, you know, look at these docs. We don't have time for that. We got jobs. We got things to do. I have to record a radio show. I can't go do it, right? But if they don't do it and they don't tell us the truth, we are in danger of losing our republic and our freedom. And as I have said many times, the default position of humanity is tyranny. And we get so accustomed here in the United States that, oh, it'll never change. This is great. Look at everything we got. But you know what? That can go away. All it takes is one or two events that could really trip us and stumble us. And then a couple of crazy court decisions. You know, you look at the activist left-wing judges we have in our country who come up with things that really make no sense. They're not part of the American tradition. They keep changing what America is from the bench. Is that what we envisioned our courts to do? If our forefathers could sit around a table with me right now, if they could come to the neighborhood and sit down with Lieutenant Joe, do you think Washington and Jefferson and all those fellows that came up with this country, this vision of this country, would say, well, that's what we kind of figured would be cool. You know, at some point you go down the road, you tear yourselves apart. No. They envisioned that default position of humanity. They knew that that was the tendency of human beings to fall back into that. And they tried to set us up to cherish freedom and to cherish liberty and to do whatever we could, all of us, even if we had different opinions about things, that all of us should cherish liberty and freedom, and we should be willing to fight for it every single day. We should be able to, as one nation, preserve our own freedom. But we're not far away from losing that. Now, I'm not a doomsday person, and I'm not a conspiracy guy, and I don't think it's around the corner, but I think it wouldn't surprise me if it happened. Let me just put it that way. It would not surprise me if it happened, because I think that's certainly part of what could go on. All right, so there, I covered a little bit about Comey. I gave you my opinion over there on that. We've had another mass shooting incident, another active shooter incident out there in Texas, and we see this guy. Cops try to stop him for whatever violation, and he starts shooting through the car windows, and he hits two troopers in a car. He hits one of the troopers. Next thing you know, they're in a pursuit. There's a gunfight. He's shooting at people randomly as he's driving down the road. He shoots and kills a mail carrier, female mail carrier, takes her truck, is driving around shooting more people. This was a horrific incident. And we see immediately the anti-gun people jump out and start screaming. You know, we have to immediately ban this AR-15. We have to ban the... But it's amazing that people don't really understand guns, semi-automatic weapons. The AR-15 is a scary-looking gun. And they make it that way so people will buy it. Because it looks really cool. It looks like, you know, a military weapon. But a Ruger Mini 14, you can shoot the same exact rounds just as fast because it's a semi-automatic rifle. But it certainly doesn't look as cool as the AR-15. So really what they want to get down to is they're going to start with, well, we're going to ban the AR-15 and the AK-47. Because you don't need 10 bullets to shoot a deer, you know, Mr. New York Cuomo there. But that's the slippery slope. Because then they go down the road and say, well, you know what, that Ruger Mini 14, well, that can shoot just as many people. So we're going to get rid of that. We're going to get rid of the magazines. You can have one bullet. Everybody's going to be like Barney Fife running around with one bullet. You got your one bullet here. Put it in your gun. You can shoot it when you want. That's where they're going. Because their goal is really not protecting people. Their goal is to disarm the American people. Now, of course, you want that's a conspiracy area. They want to disarm us what? So they can control us? Well, they don't like that the American people are armed. They never had. This Beto O'Rourke. Right, this guy comes out the other day and he says, you know, he's really doubling down on being a super tyrannical liberal, that if he's elected president, he's going to have a mandatory buyback of AR-15 and AK-47 rifles. You will have to sell your gun back to the federal government so that they can destroy it or do whatever they're going to do with it, but you can't have it. So my question immediately is, okay, he becomes president, he does this edict, I guess, if he has the Congress with him, they can come up with a law, ban it, they can do a constitutional amendment if they got the people to do that. What happens when somebody decides, I'm not giving up and selling back my AR-15? I'm not giving up my AK-47. I don't care what your stupid law says. I'm an American. and I am not selling back my gun, what do you do then? Do you go and kick in people's doors and take their weapons away? See, that's the tyranny part, ladies and gentlemen. That's the tyranny part. They say they're doing something to save people. And believe me, you know me. This is my business. This is my life. I try and save people. But they're going to do it whether you like it or not. They're going to come and take your guns away. Now, you think that's really going to stop people from doing bad things if they come and take an AR-15? They'll start using hunting rifles if that's what they want to shoot people with. You know, they'll use handguns. Oh, what's next? Semi-automatic handguns? Right? Oh, what about a revolver? Every time you pull the trigger, a bullet goes off, right? So it's not exactly, it doesn't feed itself, doesn't look cool like a semi-automatic handgun. But can't you shoot a lot? Well, you can only shoot six at a time. You see, the arguments start to become ridiculous. The number of shootings that we have, which are horrific, each and every one of them. This last week in Odessa, Texas, these officers getting shot at. This guy killing, I think, seven or eight people. And then, of course, the officers killed him. Horrific that this guy's riding around doing that. But you know how many people were killed this weekend in Chicago or Baltimore or any one of many other American cities? How come we're not going in there trying to get the guns away from criminals? You know, the illegal guns away from the criminals. Why don't we have a task force of 40,000 FBI agents cramming into these cities and going after the criminals with these weapons? Let's get them away and save the innocent people that live in those communities that are being victimized by these criminals with their illegal weapons. Why don't we do that? No, don't talk about that. We don't want to talk about that. And that's part of the problem. We don't talk about what we should talk about, and we talk about what we shouldn't talk about. So on that note, we're going to be back in a few minutes because I have a lot more to say about our brothers and sisters in blue out there who do the right thing by all of us every single day. And we want to thank law enforcement and our corrections people everywhere.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good taste in gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company, Healthy Cell, will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com.
All right, ding, ding, ding. Here we go, round three here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Now, I don't know about you, but where I am, there are some big old thunderstorms starting to roll in. And those thunderstorms remind me of when I was a cop and you had to work out in the street. You know, I was uniform patrol for 8 years, almost 9 years. And when you're a brand new cop, you come on the job, you get all the details that the more senior people don't want. So if it comes to a rainstorm and there's heavy traffic and the lights go out, guess what? Stick on your raincoat, kid. Put your hat on, the little plastic thing on top of your police hat, and get out there and direct that traffic in the rain and the lightning and the thunder and the misery of the weather. Whether it was snow here in the Northeast, you know, you're out there working in the ice cold, you got all this heavy equipment on, plus you're wearing these big heavy winter coats, you got all this stuff. It was difficult, right? And you had to go do that. I'll never forget there was a time we had a female police officer, one of our first female police officers on the job, and I was honored to be asked to be her training officer. And Officer Charlene was actually a very tough young woman. She was smart. She wanted to do the job. She really wanted to learn, and she learned very quickly. Well, her and I were out one day, and it was during her training period, and we're riding around, and there was some hellacious storms on the Jersey Shore. We get these summertime thunder boomers that just like explode all over the place, and it blew up all the power. And power was out everywhere. Trees were down, and we were running around, you know, like crazy. Like any of my brother and sisters that are out there who go through this kind of stuff in this crazy weather, hurricanes, tornadoes, all this stuff. There is an excitement to it when you're running around. You're trying to do these things. But we were out there directing traffic because all the lights had blown out. And, you know, of course, I do the right thing. I get out of the car in the rain, unlike some senior guys and girls I've seen, where they'll say, all right, kid, get out there and direct that traffic. I wanted her to be safe. I wanted her to see how to do this, and I wanted to pass on to her what I had learned about the dangers of directing that traffic. Now, I know right now there's a lot of police officers out there laughing when I talk about directing traffic, because we all know there's a saying that you'll see on the internet when it comes to cops. If you want to see the stupidity of people, go direct traffic somewhere, because you'll have the road blocked off. There'll be lights, flares out, cones. You got things to block the road so people can't go up the road. And they'll pull up to you and go, officer, can I go that way? Excuse me, sir. You mean you see all the cones? You see all the lights? You see all this saying, don't go that way? Yes, but I want to go that way. That's the way I know how to go. No, you can't, sir. The bridge is gone. You want to fall into the water? What are you talking about here, right? So go direct traffic, and you'll see the stupidity of people. But anyway, Charlene and I are out there directing this traffic, and it was tough. People are trying to get home. We're trying to get them as safe as we can, but it was pouring. I mean, we were soaked to the bone underneath our raincoats and all that. And then all of a sudden, after about an hour or so, we see the lights start to come back on. Tick, 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 tick. Right? The lights are all starting to pop back on. And right above our heads, the traffic light, boom, comes on. And we're looking at it, so I say to her, listen, let's give this a minute. This could be a test. You know, they're running the power, make sure it's all connected. They could turn it back off, and then we got to set back up out here. So just give it a minute. Well, as we're standing there, looking down the road, this really long road, you could see about a mile up the road, you hear like a sizzle sound. Zzz, pow, and then another one, pow, and they're getting closer, and you realize it's the transformers popping. Whatever had caused the problem wasn't fixed, and now all the transformers are popping. And right above our heads, I see a transformer, and I hear it starting to hum. So I just grabbed her, and we ran behind the car, and this thing popped, this unbelievable bright pop, blue electrical look, chemicals going all over the place. And she says, is this what it's like all the time? I said, well, not all the time, but yeah, that's part of directing traffic. So Charlene was excellent, and she had a great career in law enforcement, became a great police officer on her own, and I just want to remember her today. She was really great. You know, when I think back, you know, working the holidays is a hard time, and we got the holidays coming up, you know, and it doesn't matter what your holiday is. You got Christmas, you got Hanukkah, you got Thanksgiving coming up, you know, even Halloween. If you got little kids, you want to go trick-or-treat with your kids, and you're working. You know, you see everybody else trick-or-treating with their kids, but you're in a police car riding around doing police work. It's really tough sometimes. You know, at the end of the year, like I said, we got Christmas, we got Hanukkah, you got Kwanzaa, you got all these different family-related holidays, and you want to be a part, you want to go and be with your family. So again, as a young guy, you know, you got the last pick of holidays, so you ended up working all the holidays. And I saw some funny things over the years. My first Thanksgiving, I was working 3 to 11 shift, so of course we ate turkey at my house at 11 o'clock in the morning so I could go to work for 3 to 11. And I go on this call to an apartment complex, husband and wife domestic. Now, it's funny. The holidays are stressful enough. But when you're having marital problems, it just gets enhanced sometimes by the holidays and the stress of the holidays. So we get this call, domestic violence at this apartment. I pull up into the courtyard, you know, the parking courtyard of the apartment complex. And I hear screaming and yelling coming from an upstairs apartment. Well, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the window opened and out comes the turkey. I mean, come right out the window. Who, whether it was a husband or the wife or whatever, they threw the turkey right out the window. And it lands in the parking lot, and there was a senior officer there looking at me. He says, well, here we go, kid. Welcome to the holidays. And it's like, why would you throw your turkey out the window? But that is the symbol of the holiday, and people get all ticked off, and they take it out on each other and the symbol. At Christmas time, you know, at Christmas time I'm working. And it was funny, that same officer, Charlene, she was on her own now at this point, riding around, and her and I are working, and she gets a call for domestic at Christmas time. And we pull up to this house. There was about a half inch of snow on the ground. It had snowed the night before, about 2 weeks before Christmas. And we pull up, and there's the Christmas tree on the front lawn with all the presents thrown out the door. And the husband and wife are throwing the presents out the door, screaming and yelling at each other. Inside, they had made a beautiful spaghetti and meatball dinner, which was thrown all over the house in their argument and fight. And you just kind of look at yourself and you say, Did it get to that point that you threw the Christmas tree and the presents outside and then you threw the food all around? But these are the kind of things you see in law enforcement. Some of the other things that I've seen out there, you know, I think of the men and women I worked with and how good they were, how talented they were, what decent people. And we don't always hear these kind of stories. I know sometimes you'll see in social media, you know, a cop pulls over and he helps a kid with his, you know, his bike, put the chain on the bike, or you see, you know, kids doing stuff. There was an officer, Matt Sharon. Matt was a mentor of mine. Matt is a great guy. He's retired as well. But I can't tell you how many decent things I saw Matt do. And I'll tell you, this guy was physically, he was thin, probably 5'10", not a really gigantic kind of guy, thin. But man, this dude was tough as nails. You did not mess around. Now, Matt would talk to anybody, whether they were bad guys, bad girls, good people, bad. He would talk to everybody. He gave everybody a fair shake. He treated everyone decently. But there was a tripwire with this guy. You know, you stepped over that line and you did so at your own peril, because he would give you all the space in the world. But as soon as you got out of line and started to get mouthy, disrespectful, or threatening in any way, this guy that you would look at and say, well, you know, he's not a real big guy, this guy was like a spider. He'd be on you in 2 seconds. And I seen him fighting with people. Unbelievable. To do the right thing, to take people into custody, to protect people. He was a great street cop. He really was. He was always happy being a street cop. I thought he would have been a good detective, a great supervisor. But Matthew just wanted to be a street cop. He wanted to be out there doing it. Well, one day, we'd go on a call, and there was a guy. I wish I could remember the guy's name, but he was a homeless guy. And we get a report of a homeless guy behind this strip mall. You know, the business owners, they see homeless people back there. And, you know, they're going through dumpsters. They're looking in cars. You know, sometimes they take change, whatever. They're trying to survive. You know, it doesn't make it right, and people don't want you in your car. But so they get the call. Sometimes the people are just hanging out back there because they have no place else to go. You know, so they're just hunkering down, you know, with a blanket overnight. So we get this call, and we go back there, and here's this guy, and he's rooting around through a dumpster behind a pizza parlor, and he sees us. You know, I get out, Matt shows up, it's his call, right? Because he goes, hey, come over here. And the guy says, who, me? He says, yeah, come over here. I'm going to talk to you. And the guy comes over, and he's got a pizza box in his hand. And he says, what are you doing back here? And the guy says, I got no place to go. I had an apartment, I had a room over at the hotel over there, and they threw me out, and I have no place to go, and I got all my junk here. And I'm hungry. I had no food. He goes, so you're going through dumpsters? He goes, yeah. And he opens up the pizza box. And there's like 4 slices of old pizza pie in here, covered in bugs. You know, it had been in the dumpster probably for a couple hours. It was summertime, covered in bugs. So Matt looks at that and he goes, give me that. And the guy's like, but I'll eat it. You got to understand, I'll eat it. And he takes it and he throws it back in the dumpster. Then he goes in his pocket and he pulls out a $20 bill. And he hands this guy a $20 bill. He says, go around to the front of the pizza store. Go inside and get yourself something to eat. Don't be eating out of the dumpster back here. Well, this guy was dumbfounded, but I think I was more dumbfounded than this guy was. Because what a genuinely decent thing to do for anybody. But to do it as a cop, to go there, you know, most people would think, oh, you know, you roust them up, you get them out of there, they're doing whatever. This was just a human being who was hungry. And Matthew saw that. That's what he saw in this guy. He didn't see a homeless guy. He didn't see a bum. He didn't see a vagrant. He saw a human being who was hungry, eating out of a dumpster. So the guy had all this stuff. You know, you see homeless people, they got stuff. They got their bags of stuff. That's all their stuff. Everybody would wonder, what's in those bags? It's their stuff. The only clothes they got, anything that they got in those bags, right? So Matt goes over, and there was a bunch of old shopping carts sitting there, right? So he sees this shopping cart. He walks the shopping cart over to the guy, takes the stuff. He goes, let's put all your stuff in this thing. He goes, oh, he goes, I can't take that shopping cart. He goes, listen, you're just going to borrow it. You're just going to borrow the shopping cart. You hang around here a lot, right? You go back and forth to Asbury Park. He says, yeah. He goes, okay. Matter of fact, so nobody bothers you. He gets a piece of paper. And I say the guy's name was Richard. He goes, what's your name? He says, well, my name's Richard. So Matt takes this piece of paper and he puts it on the cart right in the front. He writes, this is Richard's cart. And the guy was, again, he was dumbfounded. He couldn't believe what a decent thing. He ended up laughing. We laughed. He went around front. He had something to eat. And it was really a wonderful thing to see this officer, this tough-as-nails officer do. Taught me a lot about how I should behave with the public, how I should look beyond just what you see in front of you. There was another great guy I worked with, Gary D'Esposito. Gary was another one of these, unbelievable street cops. Gary was my training officer. When I first came out, we were going midnight shift, and it was Memorial Day weekend, so it was busy. And we're out there, and this guy would start at 11 o'clock on the midnight shift, and he didn't stop until 5 minutes to seven. Stopping cars, looking for suspicious people, answering calls. He was exhausting to work with because he did not stop all night long. And, you know, after I got cut loose, and Gary's still a patrol officer, he stopped in a car, you know, on the Asbury Park traffic circle. There's a lot of cars. It's a meeting point of three different towns and a couple of different highways. And we have a lot of people coming and going. And it wouldn't be unusual at 2:30 in the morning to hear Gary call out a car stop. And you go over there and he's got four big guys sitting on the side of the road. And there he is searching this car. You know, he was a road warrior. Gary was a great guy, a good, decent human being, too. I saw him go into his pocket a few times for people that, you know, quietly. He never made a big deal out of it. He would talk decently to people. He treated them decently, and he moved them along. But sometimes I saw him go in his pocket and throw people a couple of bucks so they could go eat or take care of their problem, whatever it was. Really a decent man. You know, unfortunately, for Gary, and I mention this because I didn't really want to segue into this, but it's part of the blue experience right now. We're seeing a lot in the news and a lot of articles about law enforcement suicide. And we lost Gary after he retired. He retired as a captain, great guy, but we lost him. And everyone was heartbroken that this genuinely good and decent man, great cop, great friend, awesome person, would reach such a point in his life that he would choose to go out that way. And it really, I think it was painful to all of us, and it brought it home to everybody, is how prevalent law enforcement suicide is, whether it's active duty police officers or retired people. It happens a lot, my friends. I wrote an article a while ago that appeared in the FBI. It was one of the first articles I ever wrote because I saw this tragedy up close. A guy I was friends with, and when we were younger, we played music together. You know, he was a bass player, I was a guitar player, and we kind of lost track of each other as we got older. I became a cop, he became a cop somewhere else, and he rose through the ranks in his town, and he became a prominent individual, and he had some problems, marital problems, he had some problems at work, and he ended up taking his life, and I knew this person personally, and that really shook me. But it happens. Over the course of my career, there were quite a few law enforcement officers that I know that took their lives. So I'm going to ask the team back at AmericaOutloud.com to throw that article up there, because it really helps you understand, if you're not law enforcement, the pressures what causes that? What causes that kind of a pain in someone's heart that, you know, they're serving the public, they're doing the right thing their whole career, and at some point, either when they're on the job or after they retire, it just becomes too much, and they take their lives. And it's hard to understand why people would do that. And I always say all the time, because I teach about suicidal stuff, and I say, they're not in their right mind when they do that. And to try and be rational and think about why somebody would do that, it's hard to put those two pieces together. So I want you to, you know, we're a prayerful group here on America Out Loud and on Chasing Justice. So say a prayer for all the men and women of law enforcement out there and our military who are unfortunately finding themselves in that dark place and taking their own lives. It's really a terrible thing. And I do pray over it. And I will ask everyone out there to say a prayer for the blue, as well as our military and corrections, that, you know, they find another way to deal with the problem, to get help. And, you know, you can do that when you see a cop working. Hey, how are you? Thanks for your service. It's really, it does make a difference. We know when people hear that. You know, I thought it was nice when people, to this day, when they hear, I'm a lieutenant, I'm a retired lieutenant, hey, thanks for your service. It's really nice to be remembered that way. And maybe that can help put a little light into the darkness and maybe save somebody's life. You never know. So when I look at the law enforcement people, you know, we had Charlene Cieglio, we had Matt Sharon, we talked about Gary D'Esposito. Just so many really, really good people I've come across in my career that you see people go above and beyond. They go above and beyond to do things for the community that they serve. You know, we had a young cop. I did his background. He came from an area that was a tough area. His family had some difficulties, but this was probably one of the most decent young men I had ever come across. And we were doing his background. We went to his family home, you know, where he grew up, and it was a tough neighborhood. It was a tough spot, but you can see the decency of this young man just shone through. And he gets the job, and he's out on patrol, and he took pride in himself. He took pride in his community, took pride in his brotherhood and sisterhood of law enforcement. He was fair and decent and honest with people. He was really great. If you needed locking up, you got locked up. But if you didn't, he would help figure out whatever your problem was, the reason he was on the call. And one day, I was a supervisor, and I'm riding around, and I see these kids playing football at an apartment complex. And I see two officers. They got their hats off, which was, you know, as cops will tell you too, that's a sin in a lot of police departments. You don't take your hat off unless you're in a fight. Well, these two guys got their hats off. They got their ties pulled to the side, and they're playing football with these kids on the grass in front of this apartment complex. And I thought it was so amazing that they were connecting to these kids. They letting kids see great examples of these two men who went into law enforcement, that this was an option for them. It was great. So I come pulling up, and of course they see me. They see the lieutenant. Uh-oh, they got the tie off. They got the hat off, and they come running off. Lieutenant, I'm really sorry. Don't mean to be out of uniform. I said, wait a minute. Wait, whoa, whoa. So you're here playing football with these kids. You got radios on? They're like, yeah. I said, okay, who's winning the game? Right? And they, well, actually, me and that kid are beating him and this kid. I said, go back and keep playing. Leave your radios on. This is an awesome thing you're doing. Now, I had a problem later on because some of the higher-ups didn't think that was a good thing to do. But you know what? Too bad. I made that call, and I make that call again because they're good, decent guys, being a great example. So that's what I saw in law enforcement. And over the course of time, we'll talk more and more about some of the cops I came across and people I've read about. And let you know the inside world of law enforcement, because that's what we do. So in all of my columns are called Behind the Badge, because that's what I want people to know. What goes on behind that badge? What's the heart that beats in the men and women who have taken on this tremendous job that we all need them to do? So thank you, Blue. Thank you, Corrections. Thank you, Military. We'll be back here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.